Welcome back to Coastal Connection. I'm Brian Russo.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9.
And in this next segment, we're going to learn what it takes to launch a rocket into space.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Liftoff on Apollo 11.
This audio is from the famous 1969 Apollo 11 launch, which sent humans to the moon for the very first time. It was a moment that millions of people around the world watched in amazement. And more than 40 years later, NASA launches still have the power to capture our imagination and make us wonder what exactly is involved in sending rockets high above the Earth. Back in June, we got a firsthand look at that process, going behind the scenes into the control room at the Wallops Space Flight Facility. We arrived at the control room at 5 p.m., 6 hours before the scheduled launch. The control room is exactly how you would imagine a NASA control room to be. Massive screens take up the entire front wall, showcasing shots of the launch pad and various other radar screens. Now, off the main control room are four other rooms, each with huge computer screens covering and monitoring every piece of this massive operation. And there are likely very few things that are more complicated than trying to shoot a rocket into space. So as you might expect, there's a quiet tension in this room. It's actually eerily quiet if you aren't wearing the headphones. One of the first people I spoke with was Giovanni Rosanova. He's the payload systems manager for the Sounding Rocket program at Wallops. And on this night, he's in charge of monitoring all of the operations involved in this launch. Rosanova says everyone at Wallops is pretty excited about this particular launch.
The experiment that's on board this rocket is really the main reason why we're so excited about it. This experiment has flown 3 times before, I believe, and this will be its final launch on this Sounding rocket. It's been recovered out of the desert several times. We've launched this mission from White Sands, New Mexico several times, and now they're ready to kind of retire this instrument. And in doing so, we're putting them on a higher performing rocket that'll get them more hang time in the air, more observation time of the targets that they're looking at, and then just let it expire on its way in. And hopefully that additional time observing their targets will give them worlds more data than, you know, say flying three more times on a smaller rocket.
Just looking around the room, my mind is completely boggled by each thing that I focus on. Tell people what it's like to be in a control room on a launch day. Tell people what it's like.
Right, so it's the behind-the-scenes stuff that's really amazing. There's so many different organizations here at Wallops that come together on a day like this to make it work. So in this room, you've got the people behind this that are kind of overseeing the entire operation. They're responsible for making sure all the cast of characters are talking to each other and in sync. So yeah, it's not like going into your backyard and lighting the fuse on a bottle rocket. It's
right.
It's a huge operation.
And this isn't exactly a small rocket either. I mean, this is a 70 plus foot rocket itself. But, you know, I was told that, you know, the scientists are worried about the telescope that is being, you know, that is aboard this rocket is extremely small. It has to be kept at a very cold temperature. Tell me about that.
So on board the inside their telescope, they have a cryogenic cooler, and basically they're flowing liquid nitrogen through, you know, behind their detector, because in order to take a good image of infrared radiation coming from deep space, their detector has to be cold. So they're flowing liquid nitrogen behind their detector to cool it down to a certain temperature, so that it can sense, you know, very slight variations in the temperature profile of deep space is basically what they're doing. Once we launch, that liquid nitrogen line gets cut, and then there's a certain amount of time where it can stay cool and still get good data.
Wow.
Yeah.
The math just to figure all that out and determine that just completely blows my mind. With all the things that are going on and all these different organizations and all these moving parts, you would think that maybe a control room like this during a launch would get very chaotic. And here we're 5 hours out. But I've been told before that it gets almost deathly quiet during a launch. Is it just, you know, quiet enough to hear a pin drop? Is it extremely tense for you?
Depends on if you have a headset on or not.
Yeah.
If you have a headset on, it's pretty chaotic because everybody that's that whole orchestra that we were talking about before, people in this building, people in the other building, people on the pad, everybody's communicating via their headsets. If you're in this room and you don't have a headset on, you really can't hear what's going on. It does seem eerily quiet. But then as soon as you get on the net, you hear, okay, you hear the people that are turning the payload on. They're saying, okay, payload's on. And then you got other people in the TM readout saying, yeah, I see it. I see the signal. Everything looks good. You got the surveillance people saying, okay, there's a boat 20 miles out. And then the safety people say, okay, he's not a problem. Or he says, yes, he is a problem. The range is red at the moment, but if we shift the launcher 70 degrees, we'll be green. You know, so all that's going on at the same time. Now, that's why we go by a script, and that's what you see in front of us here, and
that's the count.
That's the countdown. So we have a script where we go through, and each person has a duty to do at certain times in the countdown. And each person calls out their item as it's completed. And the test director job and the range operations assistant's job is to make sure that each person calls out their item and confirms that they've completed it. And then the most exciting part is when we get down into the last 3 minutes when we're on internal power, you know, the payload's on batteries, and range safety says we're green. Test director says, okay, let's poll everybody for readiness, and everybody says, go, 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 go.
How optimistic are you that tonight, when we leave here, it'll be mission accomplished?
My only concern right now would be the experimenter being happy with the temperature of his detector. But luckily we had two practice counts earlier where he kind of characterized how long it takes for his detector to come to the temperature that he wants it to. We practiced the elevating and lowering the launcher at the right speed as to not disturb that stability there. So but that was all conducted during the day with the sun beating down on it.
Right.
When we go hot for the real launch, we're going to be at night, so the conditions are going to be slightly different. So that's really my only concern, just my own personal concern, is that those different conditions might cause us to, you know, delay something or what have you. But in terms of the readiness of all the support systems on the bird and on the ground, the team's really done a great job coming together and making sure everybody's ready for this launch.
Everyone was ready, but as the hours passed, doubts started to creep in. Scientists began to worry the temperature of that telescope was not dropping to the levels they wanted. Jay Pittman is the range commander at Wallops Flight Facility.
We thought we had allowed enough time in the countdown for the temperature to get to achieve the desired temperature. We had seen it do that in past experiments, but there's a little disagreement right now about whether or not we're going to make that. We have figured out that our sort of perfect time tonight, if we do go, is about 11:30. So we've adjusted the launch countdown just a little bit to shift to that time where the science is going to be best. That's nice because it also gives us an extra 30 minutes to cool things down.
Sure.
Right now, the key people for this, the test director, the scientist, and the folks from the Sounder Rocket program are huddling up to sort of look at the trend lines and look at the data and figure out, whether or not tonight's going to look like a good night. Does it make sense to push through? So that's where we are right now.
When do you think that they will make that decision concerning whether or not we're going to go tonight? Within the next hour, or is it a decision that could be made right up until, you know, T-minus, 5 minutes?
The question right now is, are we trending well enough that it makes sense to continue the launch attempt? And my suspicion is that we are.
Mm-hmm.
That decision, do we call it now or do we keep pushing on to 11:30? That decision will probably be made within the next 15 to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
If we do continue, like I said, I would guess that we would, just because there's so much to be learned by continuing the count, because it's sort of like a science experiment in itself to how well is the system cooling. If we do continue the count, then we might get into the 11:20, 11:25 time period, and not only will we be monitoring the ships offshore and everything else, but we'll also be looking at that temperature to make sure that it achieves its target temperature just in time for launch. So what we're doing right now is we're pushing the decision a little bit further in time. It'll make the final terminal count a little more exciting.
Now for you, where you're part of this rocket launch is, you know, I guess comparatively speaking, rather low maintenance on what we're dealing with right now. What's it like to sit here knowing that your part of it is all good to go, knowing that there's still uncertainty on whether or not it's going to happen?
Sure. Well, it is a little bit nerve-wracking. The way that I try to think about it is, you know, what's important is that we maintain not only a view of all the details across the range, on the rocket itself, on the science instrument, but also of the big picture. We gotta make sure that everybody still continues to play as a team. So when an issue like this comes up, all the attention naturally shifts over into that area. Everybody's paying attention now to the temperature of a mirror on an instrument that's on the nose of an 80-foot rocket.
Right.
So, but what that for me does, it kind of is the cue for me to not pay attention to that. There's enough technical experts paying attention to that. So what I generally find myself doing is shifting back to that big picture, making sure that, you know, that we are still keeping firmly in view the fact that we, A, have to protect the public from what we're doing, that we got to make sure our own people are safe, and that we keep an eye on those big things that can come and bite us while we're paying attention to the nit that is really this mirror.
Let's talk about sounding rockets, period, because many projects or many missions have been going up on these NASA sounding rockets. They're certainly in space for just a short amount of time, comparatively speaking, to past rockets that, you know, orbit the Earth.
Sure.
And,
yep.
And talk about the pros and cons of doing these sort of sounding rocket missions versus the historical sort of, you know, orbital missions.
Sure. Well, sounding rockets, there's an amazing advantage that they have. In most cases, not for this particular mission, but for this telescope in the past, we launch them and we get them back. So what that allows you to do is make a mistake. You can put something up and you can see, did it work? Did it work the way I expected? You can get it back down, you can fix it, and you can try it again. That iterative method of maturing a science instrument is what has led the Sounding Rocket program, and I'll add the Balloon program, which we also manage here. It has led those two programs to be incubators for instruments that are on the major satellites that go around the Earth every day now. Mm-hmm. So that's the biggest advantage. It lets you try new things. I mean, we're operating here for a tenth or even far less of the cost of one of those, just the rocket alone for those missions. So what it does is it allows science teams to really reach out and touch sort of that next generation of science instruments that will form the basis of our future on-orbit satellites.
Most people will never sit in a control room at NASA and watch one of these things. This is, you know, part of the gig for you.
Yeah, it is.
Is there a process that you go through, you know, an arc of events or emotions that you go through every time that you sit through one of these?
Yeah, it is, and it's a roller coaster. I try really hard to be the most pessimistic person in the room, and that's not my nature. I'm a pretty optimistic guy, but I am when I come in the door, I'm constantly looking for any little thing that's wrong. I'm looking for the person who's maybe in a bad mood that day. I'm looking for, you know, anything that's not exactly right. And fortunately, surrounded by a great team. And when I see those things, I say, hey, find out what that was. And you know, do we need to worry about that? Because I want to worry about everything before my team gets a chance to do it. So I'm kind of operating a little bit out of my normal mode, but I kind of do get wound tighter and tighter. But I try to about every 20 minutes, I'll just tell myself, you have to focus on every single thing. You have to be able to see every single thing.
Jay Pittman and his colleagues spent the next few hours in deep concentration, and the launch time slowly crept closer. But 15 minutes before the rocket was supposed to take off, there was a problem.
So at the T-minus 15 minutes check, which is the beginning of what we call a terminal count, all of the critical elements of the range and of the mission itself are polled for a simple red or green. Are you good or are you not? At that point, there's no more time for things to improve or anything else. You got to report your status. At that T-minus 15 minute call, the PI reported that the instrument was not as cool as he needed it to be at that point in the count, and so he reported that he was red. And at that point, the decision was made, and so we decided to step back and call it launch for the evening. We'll still use this time. We've got the whole team here, but you can, if you're looking around, you can tell that the attitude has shifted, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can hear it, feel it in the air and in the chatter. So what we're going to do is we're going to use this time to actually go back and do a check of the vehicle now that we've actually got it elevated in its flight configuration. So this will be a test that will help us reduce the risk for future launches, mm-hmm. because we'll have this under our belt, and then we'll be maybe a little bit better position to skip it if we start seeing some weather patterns that are constraining our launch window. This gives us some freedom.
So the next step is to essentially move this to tomorrow, which would be, or to move the launch to Wednesday rather than Tuesday night. What are your concerns going into tomorrow, knowing what the weather's going, what the weather forecast says it might be?
Well, I mean, one thing, before I answer that, I would just say the next step is actually one of the most important steps that this or any other launch team does. When we close out here, this team and members of the team from other sites at Wallops will go into room, and we will rehash this for about an hour and a half. We will go through who did what, who said what, and we will look for every little nit. Remember those mm-hmm. things I was worried about? So we will even use this time later tonight to help push errors out of the system so that when we come to the next one, we'll be cleaner than we were tonight. So we will do that.
So tonight it seems that Murphy's Law beats science, so to speak. How do you rebound for something like that? And you know, after doing this for so many years, how do you not get dejected?
Well, I mean, for me, I guess, there's actually a strength that comes from stepping back when you should step back. And knowing that you can say no is what lets you say yes when the opportunity presents itself.
The team at Wallops may have said no that Tuesday of our visit, but the following evening, they said yes. And the rocket that had been the focus of such intense attention lifted off and soared up into the heavens 358 miles above the Atlantic Ocean. You can learn more about NASA's facility at Wallops at our website, wamucoast.org. You're listening to Coastal Connection here on 88.3 in Ocean City, Maryland. I'm Brian Russo.